You may think you know what Interview with a Vampire is all about if you read the Anne Rice novel or you saw the movie with Tom Cruise and Brad Pitt, but the AMC series delivers some surprises. That's because it takes the familiar tale about a young man named Louis, his handsome vampire lover Lestat, and Claudia, the creepy vampire child they adopt, and it keeps introducing twists and layers that complicate and deepen their story. It's funnier, sexier, and queerer than you remember. Most importantly, this Louis isn't a white plantation owner. He's an ambitious and closeted black man. The show just returned for a new season, so it's the perfect time to revisit our conversation about the series. I'm Glenn Weldon, and in this encore episode of NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour, we're talking about Interview with a Vampire. Joining us today is Kristen Meinzer. She's the co-host of the podcast Movie Therapy with Rafer and Kristen. She's also the co-author of How to Be Fine. Welcome back, Kristen.
Thanks so much for having me back.
Also joining us is Christina Tucker, co-host of the podcast Wait, Is This a Date? Welcome back, Christina.
Hello, hello.
So Interview with a Vampire begins with a framing device. It is 50 years after the journalist Daniel first interviewed the tortured, soulful vampire Louis. They're played by Eric Bogosian and Jacob Anderson. Now they sit down for another interview, and in this one, Louis promises to tell the truth. The major plot points are similar to what you remember from Anne Rice's 1976 debut novel and the 1994 movie. It keeps the New Orleans setting, but the events Louis describes begin in the early 1900s, not the late 1700s. Louis is a single businessman who loves his family but struggles with his sexuality. When Louis meets the striking, swaggering vampire Lestat, played by Sam Reed, the eternal life on offer represents more than just the usual vampire benefits package, strength, mind control, etc. Louis convinces himself that being a vampire will allow him to transcend a racist system and triumph over it. But when he and Lestat begin to tire of each other, they have a kid. Claudia, played by Bailey Bass, is a vampire forever trapped in a black teenage body, which complicates things. Interview with a Vampire airs on AMC. Christina, let me kick it off with you. What you think?
You know, I liked this show. I had a good time watching this. Do I think it's going to stick with me in any real kind of complicated way? Is it going to be something I revisit? Maybe not. Mm-hmm. But it's campy and it's fun. It's definitely toned down on, I think, like the horror and kind of creepy energy that the 94 film had. Mm-hmm. But we've got, you know, vampires being bitchy and catty, and I love that. I think that's fun.
What was your take on the original novel and the film?
So I know I read the original novel because at some point I was a closeted person in college, and check. I think that's like what college libraries are for.
Check, check, check.
I do remember thinking, okay, maybe this isn't for me, but this is interesting. I feel like I've done some work here that is like, you know, on my journey to my gayness.
Sure.
I do remember being terrified of the 94 movie, but I was kind of famously a chicken when it came to horror as a child. Having revisited as an adult, I'm like, yeah, this is fun. Mm-hmm. And I do like this. And Kristen Dunst's performance in that film, really chef's kisses.
Absolutely.
I'm thrilled to add this to the space of the Interview with a Vampire oeuvre. I'm not sure it is the most thinky or, you know, really thoughtful take on the material, perhaps.
Oh, interesting. Okay, Kristen, what'd you think?
I think that this just has to be accepted as a completely different beast than the book or the 94 movie. When I think of those, I think of, oh, you are so seductive. I cannot resist you. You're terrible and you're dangerous. And where did my pants go? I can't resist you. And that's not what this is. This is kind of like domestic bickering.
Sure.
This is one minute you are cohabitating with your slippers by your coffin, and then the next minute you're yelling at each other. This is not the same Lestat and Louis that we know well. And yeah, it is campy and it is comedic, and it doesn't feel dangerous or sexy in the same way. And I miss that because I really liked that about the original universe. I liked that in the book. I liked that in the movie. That's not what you're getting here. But if you can just accept this as the domestic comedy that it is, I think it could be perfectly enjoyable. But just don't go in thinking you're going to get what you got in the past.
Okay. I think you have just nailed why I like this so much better than the book and the movie. You know, of course, I read the book as a closeted college kid, just like Christina.
Unite.
Because, Christina, they were the gayest thing that everybody was reading.
Mm-hmm.
Sit around Pappy's knee. There was a time, kids, before things could be mainstream and queer at the same time. Like, we didn't have that. I didn't have to hide it. I could read it on the quad. But there was always a veil up for me because Rice's prose is so florid and breathless and swoony. You can just feel Spanish moss dripping off of every paragraph. And she's doing it intentionally, right? It's gothic horror. That's the assignment. Gothic horror, capital goth. And look, I want to be careful here. Plenty of women have written hot gay romance and hot gay sex, but these books are written by someone whose understanding of gay sex is, I'm going to say, academic, theoretical, weirdly abstract. I would say the exact same thing, by the way, about the next book where Lestat is a rock star. It's giving How Do You Do, Fellow Kids, that book. Anyway, that's why every choice this show makes to depart from the text strikes me anyway as a marked improvement. Lestat isn't just hot. He's funny and bitchy, as you both said. Louis is tortured, yeah, but it's not his entire damn personality. Having the interviewer not be this kind of breathless, enraptured young kid, but a cynical and very funny Eric Bogosian, who is constantly calling Louis out on his BS. I love that. I love the notion that Daniel, the interviewer, has lived an entire life, and now he's looking at this youthful Louis in a different way. He's got real resentment animating that performance in a fun way.
I got in that coffin on my own free will, in the quiet dark. We were equals.
White master, black student, but equal in the quiet dark.
We touched on how the show is engaging with race. I love the scene where Louis gets to hear what these white jerks think of him, and I love, in a lesser show, he'd be surprised.
Yeah.
This show is smarter than that. I love that Claudia and Louis can communicate with each other in a way that Lestat is completely shut out of.
Locked out of, yeah.
It's a special trick only folks like us have, like the nails and the teeth.
So you can hear him, but he can't. That make him the dumb one?
What's funny?
It's firing on so many metaphorical levels, not just race, but queerness, too. It's all there in the mix. You can see Louis code-switching constantly in New Orleans. I just think the show is really smart. But when a show is this smart, or I find a show this smart anyway, I worry that it's just clever. So talk to me about how this show is engaging with race. Do you think that adds something? Do you think it's window dressing? How does it hit you?
I actually really think the race stuff is like almost surprisingly well handled. I was a little nervous when I saw it, what it was going to do. But I think his interactions with the white people around him make sense. You know, he is wealthy. He is light-skinned enough that they can tolerate him up to a point. Uh-huh. But they're always, of course, casually insulting him. Their interests always supersede how much they are willing to think of Louis as a person. And it makes it like his place in that society makes a lot of sense, and his reactions to it make a lot of sense. Much like his reaction to being like, well, maybe if I'm a vampire, I will best these men in some way. Maybe this will be like the cure-all I need, because obviously my wealth hasn't done that for me. Like, maybe this is the next step I need.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think when it comes to being an oppressed person in our world, being a person of color, being anybody who is not treated as a full human, I see vampirism as a fantasy. Mm-hmm. You know, this idea that I can live forever. You can't hurt me. I can destroy you and you won't even see it coming. What a fabulous fantasy is that, you know? I love revenge fantasies, and I love the idea that you can look down on me and in the end, I will destroy you and live forever.
Yep.
So screw you.
There you go.
That's just the way it's going to be. And I have to agree with Christina as far as how race is handled in this. I thought it was really nuanced, actually. I thought it was very smart. There were no really dumb, just blunt black and white moments.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
There were different shades of gray throughout it that made it seem more real, including with Louis himself, not just in the world he lived in, but with him and with his family and so on. How do class and race intersect? How does that factor in when the money is coming from maybe unsavory places and so on? All of that is rolled into this story, making it much more nuanced than just, I am a black oppressed person who is going to live in a white world forever. It's so much more nuanced than that.
Yeah, and I think it is something that this show engages with that the books and the film just didn't bother with.
Mm-hmm.
And it does add an entirely new dimension, a third dimension that the film and the book lack. It allows you to tell different stories. It allows you to admit more voices into the mix. And I think it does enrich this kind of vampire fantasy at the heart of the story.
Yeah.
If it doesn't work, of course, you got cynical. It's window dressing, because there is a scale here of nuance. On one end, you've got colorblind casting. That's one thing. On the other end, you have this. But somewhere in the middle is the Bridgerton approach, where you have one piece of dialogue where you suggest that because the king married a black queen, that solved racism. That is not engaging with it in any, and this is what I was deathly afraid was going to be happening here.
Same.
This is doing a lot more with it. Not loving everything that it does, like the moment where Lestat impresses Jelly Roll Morton with his piano playing. That could have lifted right up. You know what I mean? It could have just gone.
Yep.
Now, the book was pretty flatly queer. The film, however, had homoerotic subtext. And when I saw the film, I was just coming out.
Yeah.
And, you know, you had these two incredibly recognizable stars being egregiously heterosexual and flouncing around with these wigs and these fancy sleeves and having this operatic, tortured emotions, you know, and the emotions and the whole metaphor was right on the nose because, you know, it was always like, oh, let's start our lifestyle. It's like, okay.
Got it.
We are monsters. And it felt like dating a straight dude where it's like, you tie yourself in knots. I'm going to go hook up with someone who's going to kiss me back.
Yeah.
This show kisses me back because it's so much more light on its feet. It's faster, it's funnier, it's weirder, and it is just gay.
Yeah.
It is just gay AF. And I am happy with that.
I mean, is there truly anything gayer than like furiously killing a tenor because he was bad in the opera that you saw? Like, I saw that and I said, this is why representation matters. This is
exactly
why I need to be represented, because I too am kind of a snobby bitch when it comes to performances from tenors. Like,
exactly.
Good. Thank you.
Exactly. Yep. Yep. And it's not doing what Anne Rice did with it, and it's not doing what the film did with it. It is, It is finding its own vibe. This series is also handling the Claudia character differently because it has to, right? Because in the novel, Claudia is 5. You can't do that. Mm-hmm. In the film, Kirsten Dunst was 12, but she played younger, so they kind of stuck to the book script. Here she's a teenager, a young teenager, but she's a teenager, and that allows the series to be a little bit more direct in her frustration. What do you make of the Claudia here?
Oh, I loved her.
Mm-hmm.
When she joined the story, things just got electric and exciting. And all the things that Louis and Lestat were refusing to actually talk about just came front and center, because she's going to say that stuff out loud. She's going to be frustrated. She's going to be angry, and she's not going to politely hold it in. She's going to scream it, and she won't have the life skills to figure it out very well, as we know by the trail of dead bodies she leaves everywhere around her, accidentally oftentimes, sometimes not accidentally.
Stop lying, Claudia.
I banned them, okay? Way to town. Nothing out there for miles. No one's ever going to find them except maybe criminals burying bodies of their own. I hate you both.
We're out of town.
Charmaine, now get out of my room!
Chalmers 3 feet below the river line.
So walk out of my room!
I am here for all of Claudia just being the teenager that essentially Louis and Lestat are as well, but just are pretending they're not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I typically find teenagers kind of exhausting, especially as they are portrayed on TV. It is like, I understand there are many feelings happening. We have to deal with them. But like, must I be subjected to watching it?
Mm-hmm.
I do like what she does for the show and for their relationship. Like, I could watch the two of them argue about like what kind of dress material she should have for probably the rest of my natural life and be totally fine. I do think that actress is very charming. I do find her performance very believable. And I do understand the need, like that she needs to be there to kind of work into their dynamic. And I do think it is successful. I think it is just my kind of personal hang up. Like, must we have a teen introduced now?
Oh, I'm so there with you. Like, there's a surfeit of sullen teens on television at any given time, and they can miss me. All of them can miss me. But I wasn't looking forward to yet another, here's a creepy Victorian doll child, you know, and we don't get
yeah.
that. It's a deliberate choice on their part to do something different, because mm-hmm. we've had lots of creepy Victorian doll, you know, horror films lately. So let's find something new.
Do you think vampire effects will ever look good on screen, or are we just resigned to?
That's a good question.
I mean, the colored contacts is a moment, you know.
Let's tick off specifically what you're referring to there. You got your colored contacts. You got your
colored contacts. The teeth.
Your Cairo syrup blood. The teeth. Sure.
The levitation.
Mm-hmm. The fast moving is always one of those ones that I'm like, if that could look good, if we could successfully pull that off, it would be rather startling, but it mm-hmm. always just looks kind of silly. And I'm just, I don't know when we're going to like crack that moment. But again, it kind of works in this show because it's so campy that like, yeah, look at me with your spooky little colored contact eyes. Like, whatever.
Yep.
This is fine. Put your little glasses on. Go off, man.
Yep.
You know, I think the effects, they're kind of cornball, but the whole show is cornball. So mm-hmm. I kind of accept it. I do want to just say, though, that aesthetically speaking, I actually think it looks terrific.
Yeah, yeah, it does.
I really love the costumes. I love the way they make New Orleans look in the early 1900s. It is uh-huh. filthy and smelly and exciting and alive, and I want to be there. I think it looks terrific.
And, you know, every so often you'll see them out in the bayou in a boat, and I'm just thinking, mosquitoes. Like, what are they doing?
Yeah.
Mosquitoes. And then I remember they're immortal, and the mosquitoes completely would ignore them, I would imagine, even though they're just giant bags of blood, so maybe they don't.
Bags of blood. So that actually opens a lot of questions.
We want to know what you think about Interview with a Vampire. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH. That brings us to the end of our show. Kristen Meinzer, Christina Tucker, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
This episode was produced by Candace Lim and edited by Ramel Wood and Jessica Reedy. And Hello Come In provides our theme music. Thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. I'm Glenn Weldon, and we'll see you all tomorrow.